Hey everyone, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Tuesday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky, more on the Rui Hachimura deal, plus previewing Lakers versus Clippers with Locked On Clippers host Darian Vaziri, all next.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks to everybody for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day, Monday through Friday, no matter how or where you get your podcasts. It's always free. It's never behind a paywall. And Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you go to see the show and get all kinds of, you know, the reception from the game on Sunday night, the incredible comeback with the Lakers combined with this Rui Hachimura thing. A lot of activity over at the Locked On Lakers YouTube channel. A lot of people subscribing and participating in the conversation there. We really appreciate it. Appreciate all the support there. Want to let you know that today's episode is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook, the official sportsbook of Locked On. Make every moment more. Visit FanDuel.com/LockedOn to get started today. So we did a mini pod on Monday afternoon about the Hachimura deal when it came down. And there was still some stuff we wanted to get into, really about what it means for the Lakers going forward, how it impacts the summer, what it may indicate about how the Lakers plan on building the team again. But just in case you missed it, to summarize briefly, Lakers, 3 second-round picks to Washington, along with Kendrick Nunn for former lottery pick Rui Hachimura, the 9th pick in the 2019 draft. Generally, I think disappointing in Washington, but looking for a new start. A lot of potential there that the Lakers hope to harness. The bullet point version of it. I like the deal. I know you did, Andy. But what makes you like it?
Well, first of all, it fills a need. I mean, they need more playable size, particularly more dynamic playable size, especially while AD's out. But even once AD is back, because you're going to obviously want to be cautious with him, at least in the beginning, if not for the remainder of the regular season. And LeBron, I think it's safe to say, could use a little more rest if he can possibly get it. And the Lakers, having another guy like Rui Hachimura who can, he can score, he can create his own shot, he can catch and shoot, being able to do and actually provide some of the size that the Lakers have been missing all season. It was interesting. I was looking at some of his positional breakdown at Cleaning the Glass, and his first couple of years with the Wizards, he was playing more 4 and 5, and then the last couple of years, more 3 and 4. I'm sure some of that has to do with, you know, Porzingis being on the team the last couple of years, mm-hmm. plus Daniel Gafford coming into his own as a pretty good backup center. But it speaks to just the ability to provide size in a lot of different ways that we've talked about it all season. This team has just been missing in optionality, much less, you know, production. So I think he just fills a need that Kendrick Nunn, even when he's playing well, and to be fair to Kendrick, the last couple weeks have been some of his best as a Laker. He's just not needed in the same way that Hachimura could be.
No, not certainly not once Reeves and Walker are back. And, you know, it remains to be seen whether or not, you know, a lot of the potential there for Hachimura is on paper. His primary talent that he's shown in the NBA is scoring.
Yeah.
That is not something currently the Lakers need a ton of. He's not been a great rebounder. He's not an assist guy. His shooting was
very good. He is not an assist guy.
Quite Nick Young, but.
Oh, well, funny you say that, actually. I looked up his Rui Hachimura's assists per 36 minutes. 1.8 assists per game. It is higher than Nick Young's 1.5 assists per 36. And Nick is a guard, so he really should be higher than Hachimura. But
that's my point. It's a lot of the potential there is on paper. He But what I think what the Lakers are hoping is that if you put him in a better defensive structure, that he's got certainly physically is capable of defending. He's big, a strong guy.
Athletic too.
Very athletic, 6'8", you know, kind of a very modern power forward. He has shot the ball well at times in his career. It was over 44%, I think it was last season with the Wizards, back down to about 33 this year. But if you start to break these things down as a spot up shooter, as a catch and shoot guy, I mean, as a corner shooter, like there are these places around
really good in the corners
where it looks like it could have potential. And the Lakers don't have to treat him like a ninth pick in the draft. They're treating him like a guy they picked up for 3 second round picks. So, I mean, all things being equal, they didn't give up a lot to take a flyer on a player that, if nothing else, provides a rotation presence where Kendrick Nunn didn't. Kendrick Nunn was not going to be in the rotation when guys were healthy. Rui Hachimura will be in the rotation when people are healthy. That makes them better. But the thing I really want to dive into before we get to our conversation with Darian is what this means going forward, because the most interesting part of this was to me was when Woj, Andy, tweeted out the Lakers are making this trade with the idea that they're going to extend Hachimura beyond this season.
Not extend him, just so people understand this. They're not looking to do an extension mid-season. They're looking
he's not extension. Not to get like too into the arcane like NBA language, he is not eligible for like the rookie extension anymore. That deadline is passed. He's on his rookie contract. But the Lakers intend to keep him. They want to re-sign him to a new contract going forward, meaning that he would eat into some of that $30 to $35 million the Lakers theoretically would have available to them next year. That, to me, is very interesting. It says a lot about where the Lakers think they might be going this offseason.
Well, first of all, I hope that it signals a willingness to make more... Like I've talked about a lot over the course of the season, treating the deadline as an opportunity to make next year's team now. You know, they obviously can be looking to make moves that help them this season, try to make that push up the standings, maybe avoid the play-in altogether, which is certainly possible. And I think Hachimura represents that. Like we've talked about, he's somebody that should be getting minutes right away, but he is somebody that they're thinking about as part of next year's team. I mean, the statement the Lakers put out there, Rob Pelinka spoke about Hachimura in very, very flowery praising terms, which, you know, I mean, it is Rob Pelinka, but he didn't describe him as manna from heaven, but he made it very clear that if nothing else, he wants to project, we see this guy as part of a long-term piece. But either way, though, what it does seem that they've given up on is any idea that the $30 million in cap space would somehow represent, I don't know, some star willing to take a massive haircut to join the Lakers cap space.
We talked about this on a show last week. Like, you know, the option for the Lakers is available to break that $30 million up into a few different pieces. And it seems like there's an escape hatch with Hachimura. This has the potential to be something that builds into next year's roster, but it doesn't have to. They're not committing to anything. So it's sort of halfway between where I think everybody was worried of, like, clearly somebody they wouldn't carry forward versus a guy who's under contract for 4 more years or something like that. I think that what you're saying about the stars is really important. Like, it seems like they might be pivoting to something where the focus would be find 3 or 4 good players. Like, let's do this in a way that allows us to use, a big exception and acquire a couple players and sign guys into space. And let's see if, you know, Hachimura, who could cost feels like about an $8 to $11 million guy something like that. You know, that kind of player, seeing the value in that and getting 2 or 3 of those guys to create a deeper roster around 2 stars instead of really searching for 3. Also, obviously, they hold on to their picks. But, you know, I like the deal for this year. It's a bit of a, you know, it's sort of no harm, no foul. I'm not pretending like I think Hachimura is this – great talent that they, you know, they stole from Washington or whatever, but it's got potential to be better here.
Hachimura has been really unhappy with the Wizards. I mean, he was asked recently if he wanted a trade, and his response was no comment, which is a two-word way of saying yes,
yes,
please, now. And he also had been dealing with some personal issues, described often as mental health issues that I have no idea if they were related anything directly to his relationship with the Wizards, but it does make you think that a change of scenery would probably benefit him regardless. Mm-hmm. And maybe being in this new setting, being around guys like LeBron and AD and, you know, Russell Westbrook, who he played with that one season with the Wizards. I mean, these guys are all pros. Like LeBron, Russ, yes, and AD are all serious pros in this league. And extended time, you know, with actual stakes for this season could maybe be really beneficial, yeah, for Hachimura.
And, you know, the Lakers, it'll be up to the Lakers, up to the Darvin Ham and the coaching staff to find ways to maximize what Hachimura does well while minimizing what he doesn't, which is what you do for, mm-hmm, role players. And that is what he is with the Lakers. He's not a lottery pick. He's a role player. And, you know, maybe he blooms into something that people are, you know, expecting. Doesn't it happens where guys in their fifth, sixth year can take a minute.
It happened with Andrew Wiggins with the Warriors.
For sure. But, you know, the it's, I, in this sort of category of like disappointing guys that you're taking a flyer on, like if my choices are Hachimura or Cam Reddish, it's the same category, same basic bear here. I'll take Hachimura.
Yeah, I like it.
So, Darian Vaziri, he is the host of Locked On Clippers. That is, of course, the Lakers versus Clippers tonight at the Crypt. Huge game. Two teams separated by only two games in the standings, despite being separated by many, many seeds. The Lakers can jump up in a big way just by winning this game tonight. So we'll preview that one with Darian coming up next.
Locked On Lakers and Locked On Clippers brought to you by FanDuel. The NFL playoffs are here, and we are stoked about our new sports betting partner for Locked On because they are the number one sports book in America, FanDuel. And if you are new to FanDuel, it's even better. They got so many great features that make betting on sports fun and easy. And for new customers, join today and get started with $150 in free bets guaranteed when you just place a $5 bet, your first $5 bet. Sign up at FanDuel.com/lockedon. FanDuel has all your favorite bets from the money line to the point spreads to player props. Plus, you can combine your bets for a chance at a higher payout with the same game parlay. All that's on an app that's safe, secure, and super easy to use. So, football fans, don't miss out. Place your first $5 bet to get a $150 in free bets. Win or lose, $150 in free bets at FanDuel.com/lockedon. Make every moment more with FanDuel, the official sportsbook partner of the NFL.
All right, Lakers versus Clippers tonight at the Crypt. And as promised, joining us to talk about that game and two teams that are confounding, I think, in many ways, to say the least. Darian Vaziri, he is the host of Locked On Clippers. You know him as Dime Dropper on Twitter. That's, of course, his YouTube channel where if you're a Laker fan, you can go see it. It does just all kinds of basketball content, including Laker stuff. So you want to check him out, Dime Dropper at YouTube. Darian, good to see you, man. It's been a bit.
Good to see you guys as well. Yeah, it's been since before our first matchup on opening night. So it's good to be back. But
has anything happened in between?
Oh, man, so much. I'd say, though, our season has gone way differently than the way we were talking that day.
I mean, both of these teams have, quite frankly, been difficult to get a beat on, and, you know, sometimes for positive reasons, sometimes for negative ones. But before we even get into this matchup, I discovered from, you know, we follow you on Twitter, you have a lot of thoughts on Rui Hachimura, in part because, like some kind of freak show weirdo, you spent a lot of time watching the Wizards, Russell Westbrook's year there, like, of your own volition. This was a choice that
people in Washington didn't watch Pandemic Wizards that season. I don't know what you were doing.
I mean, I like Russell Westbrook because he went to UCLA and my dad went there, my sister went there. So I was just interested to see how the Wizards would do. And I obviously didn't know too much about Rui Hachimura except for that he was, you know, half Japanese, went to Gonzaga. And I saw him play that season. I think he missed around 15 games. But he is – there's a talent there. I mean, he's 6'8". He's really strong. What I like about him is that he can post up a little bit too. I'm kind of a sucker for post game. And he kind of reminds me more of like a traditional power forward. I think that's a position that's kind of dying a little bit where you see like bigger guys – I'm sorry, small forwards that are a little bit bigger – play the four. Like for us, we have Marcus Morris. When he first entered the league, he was like a small forward, but because the league has gone kind of small, he's 6'8", kind of big. He can slot into that stretch four role. LeBron was a small forward when he entered the league, and he plays power forward for you guys when AD's healthy. So Rui Hachimura, in my opinion, is a little bit more traditional, 18 feet and in, can post up, can face up a little bit strong. I don't consider him a traditional wing. He's more like, as I said, like a more of a traditional power forward, but he definitely has some modern flair to him. What I'm interested to see is how good is he going to be spotting up? Because I know the Lakers want shooting and stuff. And he's, I think, an average three-point shooter. But I saw some stat today where he's good in the corner. So if you can hit corner threes, that's going to be big for you guys.
He's sure, great. If nothing else, the shot quality will go up with the Lakers relative to what he's getting in Washington. One of the things I think is interesting just about this deal is I haven't looked, you know, didn't look for a Tuesday morning, but like the – When we sat to record, it was like two games separating or two and a half games separating 5 through 13 in the Western Conference.
It's crazy, man. Like I was looking at the seeding between 5 and 13 and point differentials. The lowest was the Lakers with a minus 0.9, and the highest was the Thunder with plus 1.1 from seeds 5 through 13. Like that is incredibly tight. I mean we've seen how bunched up these teams are, but it just really underscores how there has been truly no separation between them on really any level at all.
So my question for you, Darian, like as a guy looking from the outside in on the Lakers and just watching the West, how much do you think even small deals like this, because it should improve the Lakers at least some, because it makes, if nothing else, gives him another rotation player for a guy in Kendrick Nunn that was not rotation quality. How much do you think just even a minor deal like this can matter in the West, given how it's gone this season?
I think it definitely helps. I don't think it's the needle mover that'll take this roster to become a championship roster. Personally, I think there's still a need for one other wing player that can guard number one options on other teams. I know Dennis Schroeder, Pat Bev, Lonnie Walker, Austin Reeves, they play above their size and they compete for sure on defense. But to me, you guys still lack that wing player that can also kind of be more competent offensively than like a Juan Toscano-Anderson per se. And I don't think Rui is that guy, but I do think it absolutely helps. I mean, especially a low risk, high reward kind of move like this. Kendrick Nunn, you know, he wasn't really what he was expected to be for you guys. Rui Hachimura, a young player. What I'm interested to see is, are you guys going to look to really develop him past this AD LeBron era? Because I think, in my opinion, if he just becomes a role-playing, I shouldn't say role-playing, but just like a spot-up guy, I think you could see his offensive value decrease and people start questioning how good he really is. He, to me, still needs to be throwing the ball a little bit and can go get his own a little bit as well. So especially with AD out, I think that's a good chance to get him incorporated quickly.
It's also really interesting, too, when you were talking about like how big of a needle mover this is. There's been a lot of uncertainty about how active this trade deadline is going to be, period, because there are so few sellers at the moment. Things might change over the next couple of weeks, but depending on how many teams are actually willing to deal, like there's a decent chance that Rui Hachimura could end up one of the biggest deals of this deadline period, regardless of how much you actually think he's going to help the Lakers, which in turn means the Lakers will have incrementally improved more than some of the other teams around the league just because there might not be a ton of action.
Yeah. I mean, this guy was a ninth pick in the draft. You know, there's a lot of potential here. The only thing I will say, the obvious question that Laker fans have been asking me today, how's his defense? And from my memory, I can't remember. Like, there were moments where I'd say good defense, Rui, and then there were also where it seemed like he was not great. To me, the sample size that I saw, like 30 games or so that season, was too small. And I have to go back and check what I was saying in the moment. We're all, with defense, it's like you really find out who a guy is when he's on your team. You're watching him every single night. Totally different. So we'll find out very quickly. But size-wise, I mean, if a guy that's 6'8", 248 is giving effort on defense and just knows where to be, that's a presence out there. That's a body.
Yeah. I mean, my thinking is that, you know, his defensive numbers in Washington are not good. I mean, that's, you know, it takes a cursory glance at cleaning the glass to see that. But
well, it depends on which ones. There are certain ones that are fine
every once in a while, but it's not terrible. It's inconsistent year to year. It's not like there's not a particular area where he's consistently good. He's never been a particularly good defender, at least in ways that show up in the metrics. But the flip side is he's been playing on a really bad team.
Right.
And I think when you play on bad defensive teams, it's hard to stand out. It's hard to develop really good habits. So, you know, the Lakers are better. They have had better luck. You know, Lonnie Walker started the season, who's been, you know, came to LA with a really bad reputation as a defender, got off to a really good start on that end based on effort, attention to detail, and all that stuff, started to tail off. So I think guys can buy in, they can learn, structure around them will make him better. It's just a question of whether or not, you know, he can, what's the upside there? Because certain guys just need to be okay defensively because they can put the ball in the basket or they can do other things. I don't know what to make of the conference. Because every team is like the Lakers. Oh, but they're missing Anthony Davis and other guys are hurt. Or the Clippers. Paul George has been out and Kawhi Leonard's barely played. And, you know, and all that stuff. It is so hard to project what things are going to look like in, you know, 2.5 months. Like, who's going to be healthy? Who's going to have their stuff together? So I want to ask you when we come back, what else the Clippers need, and like how, and then obviously what's been going on so we can figure out what's going to be happening on Tuesday night for this very important game between the Lakers and Clippers. So we'll do all that next. Okay, so point guard is the thing that everybody pays attention to, Darian, with the Clippers. Where do they stand on like stuff they're looking for and things they need to improve in order to shore up that roster, which had obviously really high expectations?
Well, there's two things that everyone's saying about the Clippers roster that we need. One is a traditional point guard, and another is a backup big. As far as the point guard thing, we've done this before where they tried to bring in Rondo, and then they tried to bring in John Wall, because in the early 2010s, these were two of the best point guards in the game. The thing about it is, neither of them are garnering enough respect from defenses to create those playmaking advantages. And I think people need to, I'm big on contextualizing the game in different eras. In this era, it's a very pick and roll heavy league. You need to be a threat to score, and that will open up everything else. With John Wall, it's similar to how they treat Russ. Teams are going to go underneath the screen with him. And I think Russ actually is still a better player than John for sure.
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
So John, off the ball, he's absolutely a negative. And then defensively, his effort is very wishy-washy, more often than not great. And then the team's going to go underneath the screen with him. Does he still add some pace? Absolutely. But the Clippers are a half-court team. So John Wall in the half-court, he's not that great. And then Reggie Jackson, he doesn't always really defend. And also, he's gotten a year older. And this is a guy who led the Clippers in minutes last year, who carried such a big load with Paul George missing 51 games, Kawhi missing 82 games. He and Marcus Morris were just grinding it every night, and he's been a loyal soldier, but I think it's just wearing on him. And plus, guys that can't contribute when they're not hitting shots, those are tough guys to play in the playoffs because you're going to go against better defenses, and you're just not going to get clean looks all the time. And I think Reggie Jackson at this point and John Wall, when the Clippers are fully healthy, shouldn't play at all.
Wow.
At all. And this is a big consensus from Clipper fans as well. The Clippers should ride with no true traditional point guard because neither of those two are good enough, in my opinion, to break through that. This nine guys, in my opinion, that are definitely should be playing.
Now, they've been starting Terrence Mann. And from what I've gathered from your Twitter, you're something of a man stan.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, if there's any player I would stan, yeah, he's one of them.
A maniac.
And, but A, what do you like about him in terms of what he brings to the Clippers and in this role as kind of a point guard in name only? But he's also, too, I think he's a fascinating guy because he's somebody that I think Clipper fans and really like just people who follow the NBA have been waiting for this Terrence Mann breakout for a couple of years. And you see the flashes, like you see what people believe in Terrence Mann. So what's your assessment of this right now?
Terrence, in my opinion, his ceiling will be a great role player in this league, a championship level role player. He's not going to be a star, but what we love about Terrence is, first of all, just the like size, 6'5", long arms, really competes on defense. You want a guy that's going to compete. Any fan base wants a guy that every single time they take the floor is going to give their 100%. And that's what Terrence Mann does. He plays hard every game. When the Clippers are losing by 20, he'll still be trying hard. And you obviously want guys that defend. But the thing about Terrence also is, you know, his mom was a coach. He spent a couple years at Florida State. He's one of the few players in the Clippers that when everyone's staring, watching Kawhi Leonard or Paul George, he cuts to the basket. He actually cuts to the basket. He likes to get downhill, and he's good in transition. And the Clippers, if you look at their roster, a lot of guys around 30, 31 years old, we're not a very athletic team. He adds a lot of athleticism to a team that's not very athletic. And the reason why we have such an attachment to him, I mean, you guys are well aware as Laker fans, the 50-year second-round curse, quote-unquote. We couldn't make it out of the second round. And, I mean, I always say—
Whoa. The Clippers have never made it out of the second round?
We hadn't.
I had no idea.
It was. I always said it was going to take a Herculean effort for them to do it. And I Terrence just thought Mann had 38 points.
I always thought the Clippers just thought hanging banners was gauche and there was no need. But I assume that they had been out. Like I assume
they're just the most modest franchise in all of basketball.
You guys have won a few titles, correct? That's always been my assumption.
Hey, well, it felt like it that night when Terrence Mann had 38 points or 37 points. So that for. That was something that, you know, no other Clipper team had done, and he was the star that night. So forever, he's always going to be beloved. But the thing is the defense. That's why Clipper fans are clamoring for him so much. Ty Lue has really leaned into these, and I know you guys have the same issue, where Darvin Ham sometimes plays three guards at once, smaller guards.
Four. Sometimes four guards. Not as much lately because the guards
have been Russell Westbrook at center. He did five at one point. He put Russell Westbrook at center.
The crucial difference is, though, you guys don't have many wings on the roster. We have a ton, and he still leans into it. So that, and that's, you know, Ty Lue, obviously I had so much praise for him before the season, but he's not had a good season. He's leaned very much into the guards. John Kennard and Norman Powell and Reggie, those four, three of them have been on the court all at once. Robert Covington has had so many DNPs. Terrence Mann has had games where he's played less than 10 minutes. And now finally, 45-plus games in, we're starting to have them play a little more, Reggie play less. It's just taking too long to figure this out.
So looking at tonight, like what I think is fascinating about this game is that the Lakers got the 2-10 start, and it's just been atrocious and whatever. But since then, they've kind of scratched and clawed their way back. And I think people are starting to look at them. They beat Memphis the other night. They've beaten, you know, Milwaukee. They've had some good games and then some really close games against good teams. They beat Denver and so on. And there's this feeling of, add a little bit here. Anthony Davis comes back. If he can stay healthy, LeBron is amazing again, and you know AD was playing MVP caliber and all that, like maybe they can make a little bit of noise. And the Clippers, it seems to be WTF, even though some of the explanation is Kawhi hasn't played much and Paul George has been hurt. Where are the Clippers Tuesday? Like what should people expect from this team? They've won two in a row. Is it getting any better? Like how you know what should people look for?
It absolutely is getting better, and it starts with number two. Kawhi Leonard, in the last 10 games he's played, is averaging 26 points a game. He's shooting over 50%, and he's also shooting 46% from three. So he's been electric lately. Like, there's no reason for me not to believe that come playoff time he's going to be right where he was in 2021. It's looking like that. What you're seeing also recently is you mentioned Terrence Mann is in the starting lineup, but the primary ball handler in the starting lineup is now Paul George. And I think that's honestly the right move. Looking at the nine guys we have, Paul George should be the primary initiator. Now that comes with its own issues because Paul can be very reckless with the ball. And I think something to watch in this game is we saw it in the first, on opening night, Patrick Beverley has a way of hounding Paul George. And when Paul likes to dribble, dribble, dribble at the top and face up against a smaller guard like that, that's very scrappy, quick hands, Bev does a job of agitating him. Paul George is going to have to lean into his size, maybe go to the mid post and just shoot over the top of Bev. Because when he puts on the floor, Pat Bev is reaching. And I don't want Paul to get flustered. But that's an evolution of the Clippers. You're going to see point Paul George, a lot of Kawhi, and Norman Powell has been playing such amazing basketball lately. Like, I'd be shocked if he has a bad game, honestly.
Has Ivica Zubac been slowing down a bit in January? Yeah. Looking over some of his splits, it seems like that. In particular, I ask about that because the matchup with him and Thomas Bryant could be really big, and Bryant's coming off maybe his biggest game of the season, a career high.
Arguably his best game of his career.
Yeah.
His numbers look crazy right now, Thomas Bryant. I mean, you guys give me some insight on that. Like, shooting 40% from three on the year?
I think he understands first and foremost how LeBron can make him rich, like richer.
Oh, yeah.
He figured out real quick how to play with LeBron, how to play within his skill set. Very impressive, and how to play with Russ, but like very, very impressive what Bryant does. He shoots basically from three places. The rim, which is where most of it is, three pointers where he's shooting very well, but like he had some good seasons in Washington doing that as well. And then he's got a nice little elbow free throw jumper that he takes sometimes, but that's it. Like, he doesn't shoot from other places, runs the screen and roll really well with LeBron and Westbrook, and follows — this is where, you know, the Clippers are going to have to be paying very close attention — follows plays really well. He is a good offensive rebounder, great with the putbacks,
great hands,
all that kind of stuff, just tons of energy, great hands. And so he's not going to be an inefficient player for the Lakers. Always is going to be exactly where he's supposed to be, times the roles really well. Not a good defender.
I was going to say where the Clippers will have the advantage here is Zubac will, I think, be more effective defending Bryant than Bryant will be defending Zubac. And if anything, if Zoo goes aggressively at Thomas Bryant, he could get him into foul trouble. Because, I mean, Zoo is a really skilled guy, but at the same time, like, again, looking at some of his splits, you know, in January, they're not bad, but they're not where they were earlier in the season. And there's a lot on him in terms of his position. It's basically him and nobody.
And I think that's what it is. I think that's why he's kind of slowed down. I think he's honestly been worn out a little bit. He's just not as quick on his feet as he was in the beginning of the season. And I also think when Kawhi comes back and Paul, like when Paul are back, they just, it feels like he's, I don't want to say lesser, but his role goes down, it seems, because what Ty does is he leans more into the small ball wings, and that obviously reduces Zoo's role just by definition of having no big out there. But also sometimes dumping it down to him. I personally think, and a lot of Clipper fans feel, that he should get like three or four dump downs in the post a game, because he's a decent right-handed jump hook. Like, he's pretty skilled. But again, it's that whole conversation about the post game is dead and it's, you know, this and that. But when you have a guy that has the skill, got to throw it to him a little bit. And I think sometimes Zoo can get looked off and be a little disengaged because of it, which is normal for anyone.
Go ahead, Andy.
I was going to say, where are you looking most specifically to see the Clippers attack the Lakers?
I want to say, is LeBron going to guard Kawhi Leonard? How's LeBron's defense been to you guys lately?
Comes and goes. I mean, he's been doing so much offensively.
Yeah.
And this is where it's a good point. This is where the Lakers have always run into trouble with the Clippers, is you need to figure out how to guard LeBron, or you have to figure out how to guard Kawhi and Paul George on a team with no wings.
Anthony Davis.
Who always scares me. Pat Bev is going to guard Paul George to start the game. I'm almost confident. I'm almost positive of that. Kawhi Leonard will probably see. Did Juan Toscano-Anderson start last night, or Troy Brown?
Troy Brown.
It was Troy Brown. He'll see some of that. He'll see some LeBron. He'll see some stuff.
You know what, though? Now that you're asking me, not Kawhi Leonard in isolation. I think that we should go to a good amount, but definitely putting Thomas Bryant in that pick and roll and seeing if he can guard. That's definitely the way the Clippers are going to go early.
My last thing for you, you know, a lot of people are looking at the Clippers and wondering, like, okay, at some point, you know, it's a little like the Warriors. Like, if you're, you know, you can kind of cruise your way through the regular season, try to manage it as much as possible. Obviously, the Clippers are you know, first and foremost, focusing on the health of George and Leonard, as they should. Where do you think, you know, with 35 or whatever games it is left, that they have enough time that if guys stay healthy, they can lift themselves back up into the kind of play that everybody expected from them at the beginning of the year?
Absolutely can. I think what you guys mentioned in the beginning about the West being so up in the air and there being so much change on a night-to-night basis is the safety net. Because in normal years, you have this kind of record at this time, you're probably out of the championship conversation unless you make a crazy run in the playoffs. Because we haven't seen teams that win the championships are top three seeds. Like, let's be honest. It only has happened twice lower than a top three seed. So I think we have time because the West has been so wishy-washy, but they got to get it together. I think, to your point, they have this arrogance. Like, the Warriors, the difference with the Warriors is they've been there, done that in the championship. The Clippers have not, and they seem to have this belief that we just show up to the playoffs, everyone's going to be scared of us. I think it's complete arrogance. They need to actually show this in the regular season and build continuity because it just doesn't happen like that.
Oh, you got a couple second-round playoff appearances put the fear into people.
Been to the Western Conference Finals. We've established this. They've been to the Western Conference Finals.
All right. Darian Vaziri, host of Locked On Clippers, Dime Dropper on YouTube and on Twitter. Oh, this is always good to catch up. We'll do this again in the play-in when Lakers and Clippers are contesting to get it. But I make the joke, like, it's totally possible that could happen. It's also totally possible these teams could both rise up into the top six. It's also totally possible that two guys on each team that are really important get hurt, and we're talking about the lottery.
It just seems impossible that these two teams will ever meet. Yeah,
I was going to say that. 38 years we've been doing this, saying that.
This, like, the promise of the hallway series and the LeBron-Kobe puppets were, like, the two biggest lies in NBA history. Like, in terms of things promised and not delivered, we have been promised these things for years, and we just got lied to our faces. Mm-hmm.
Shout out to Kobe, 81-point anniversary 2 days ago. So
we were there that night. Pretty amazing.
We'll do this again. Thanks so much for making the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you guys for having me, as always.